Guys, and welcome back to The Pulse. As you know, we do this every Monday, talking to people who are doing big things in various fields, hearing their stories. Today is exciting, but it's actually a bit of a challenge. How do I interview somebody who, if you look at it, is better at my job than me? Like, we kind of sit down and talk to them about their achievements as a talk show host. Craig Ferguson is that guy, as talk show host and actor and best-selling author and all good things, and apparently is also on the run doing the interview from the car. How are you, sir?
You know, I'm good. It's nice to meet you, Bill, and thank you for not revealing my location. I have a lot of different law enforcement agencies searching me at the moment. Let's just say I'm somewhere in the Ohio Turnpike area.
Yeah, the struggle is real. You know, as I said, by the time we go ahead and air this, you go ahead and cover your tracks, and you'll be all good.
Yeah, I'll be in Venezuela by then. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's tough to do to hide when you're kind of on tour, but we'll get to that in just a second. We all know where you're going to be, but it's
true.
All good. So that, starting with, we all try to kind of do a background with people. Yours is pretty extensive. But when people ask you to kind of start with that whole process of explaining how you got to where you are, is there a condensed version of that to start us off?
Yeah, I guess there's a very simple beginning of it, is that in 1975, when I was 13, I went to a Blue Oyster Cult concert in Smithtown, Long Island. I smoked a joint, and here I am.
That's the really short version. There's a lot.
Well, that was a fork in the road, I guess. I mean, I think that's what that was. I suppose, you know, I'm kind of an autodidact. I'm a high school dropout. I'm a kind of like I have an unusual trajectory, and so it's difficult to say what happened when. I was a drummer in rock and roll bands when I was, you know, when I was 17, 18 years old, and I fell in with show business people that I wouldn't normally have met because I'm from a blue-collar background, and that kind of led me into what I'm doing now. I think that's what happened. It's very hard to say, really. And I think when you say someone has an extensive background, I think what you're really saying is they're quite old. I think they're quite old because most of it is background.
So I believe that's what you heard. I don't think that's what I said. We're just talking about the whole, that means that they've had a lot of experiences,
nice.
You know, both,
yeah,
both
okay,
you know,
okay.
Positive growth. They're mature and have experienced a lot of things in life. That's my spin.
You are very good at this. Let me tell you, I think that whole introduction about me being better at your job than you, that's not true. I think you're very, very good at this. I feel challenged.
Yeah, I will take it. And you're only saying that because you're on the run and don't want us to reveal your location. But okay, like, we will roll with that. Known for a lot of
okay.
different things. You talked about, you know, you started playing in a band. You obviously are known for late night TV, multiple television shows, comedy, of course. How do you define yourself? What do you want people to know you for?
You know, I've been asked that a couple of times before, and I'll try and answer it honestly, which is I don't, it's not that I don't care. I just don't think it's for me to say how I'll be defined, how you define any other human being is how you define it. So if I'm a late night talk show host to you, then that's what I am. That's all you know. If I'm a drummer to you, then you're probably a group of about 15 people that saw me 30 years ago playing drums. But I try not to think about myself that much because I don't think that's a way to be happy. Was that deflecting the question? I'm really trying not to. I'm trying to be honest with it, but I don't define myself as anything. I do what's in front of me, and I try to have a good time.
I think
that's why I think it's so eclectic what I do. Like, I'm open to anything, really.
It's interesting because I don't think it's deflecting the question. At the same time, it's unusual for somebody in the public eye to say, I don't necessarily like talking about myself that much. I don't necessarily, you know, want to define myself a specific way. Do you think that that kind of, that's almost like we would hope all of us would be, I'm continuing to define my path. But that's not generally what people in your position say. That's not the celebrity answer.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable with the word celebrity as well, because I think that's a good word for like maybe cruises or, like the like a cable package. But I think that the calling yourself a celebrity is a little weird, and I don't like it. It's like when people say they have followers, I think, well, you're not a prophet, you know, you don't really have followers. You know, you don't, you're not the leader of a religious group, you know, you're, well, for the most part.
Right.
I'm uncomfortable with the wording of it. I try and be egalitarian about myself as much as anyone else. So, like, if I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you, whether your job is big-timey movie actor or your job is working in the toll booth on the Ohio Turnpike. If I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you.
Do you enjoy, and I kind of got that in doing research, and we do that with everybody that we speak to. You don't seem like you're somebody who necessarily enjoyed the spotlight all that much. Like, you were good at it. Like, you're doing these different things, and so it's been a career path for you. But it doesn't seem like that was like, I want to be on TV. Like, that doesn't seem like what's motivating you.
No, it's not. I think if I'm honest, when I was a kid, I wanted what a lot of kids want, which is I want to be rich and famous. And I did okay, and I got a little bit famous, and it doesn't really mean much. And also, I think that if that's all you want, then what are you going to do once you get it? And I don't want that. I am a little uncomfortable in the spotlight as well. I find myself being a little evasive because I feel like I'm being asked to sell you something, and I really don't want to sell you anything, even down to selling you a ticket for a show. I'm like, if you don't want to come, don't come. It's cool. We can still, you know, we can agree to disagree. You don't have to. You don't have to like me. It's fine.
I'm not mad at you.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, don't be mad at me. I'm just doing my thing.
So it's going to the kind of late night TV thing, because that's what a lot of people know. At least one part of what a lot of people know. That presentation came across. Like, is it at all unusual to you that the just kind of comfortable sitting there talking to people, being really comfortable making it about them and not about you, was successful? And people kind of embraced that and related to that. Again, not what you come to expect in kind of the entertainment industry.
I think maybe it was because I didn't know anything about late night television when I started it, and I didn't know anything about it when I was doing it, and I still don't know anything about it. And for me, being a late night host is a bit like maybe the way a lot of people become realtors, that, you know, nobody sets out to be a realtor, but it's a decent job, and you get your, you know, picture on a bus stop, so why not? And I did it like that. Now, I loved the job. I loved doing it. But there came a point where I thought, it's not really what I want to do with the rest of my life. And it's a very corporate environment. Paradoxically, you know, TV is much more corporate than other areas of show business. Well, maybe it's not a paradox. It's not a paradox at all. It's just, it's a very corporate, very, I don't want to say restrictive, because it wasn't restrictive, but it was, there are rules, and I don't always do well with rules.
He says while on the run.
Yeah.
Right? Like, who knew? We never would have gathered that. So when you, and kind of transitioning into a lot of the things you did, but talk a little bit more about the late night TV thing. When you were done, it seemed like you were kind of done. Like, you were like, good. I'm going to move on to the next stage of my life. And you were done with it, and pretty quietly, like, okay, I'm cool. Was that always the plan? Like, I'm good. I don't need the spotlight.
yeah, there is no plan. I mean, I think that, you know, man plans and God laughs. It's like, there is no plan. There's like, what now? That's my plan. And I kind of, you know, beyond a prudent kind of reserve emotionally and financially, I don't really have a plan. I like life. I'm grateful for it. And I want to experience as many, you know, as many things and parts of it as I can. I want to remain enthusiastic whenever I meet, like, one of my best friends in show business and kind of a mentor for me was Betty White. And Betty was like maybe the first person I worked with. And when I came to the United States, I was in my early 30s. I think she was in her early 70s. But we became great friends. And she always had such an amazing enthusiasm for what she did. And that's, I think, partially why she lived such a long and healthy life. Is that she loved what she did. She loved it. She was enthusiastic. And that's what I want. I mean, if it's just about money, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like money as much as anybody. But it can't all be about the money. You know, it can't be. Not for me, it can't.
It is. And I touching on it can't all be about the money. And you've been, you know, now you have multiple books. You've been very open about some of the challenges that you faced throughout the early part of your life, even really pre-career, I guess, in quotes. And they were serious. Like, there were some addiction challenges. You've been open about some mental health challenges. Do you think that overcoming that changed your perspective? Was it just that, you know, you needed a different outlook, or was that always kind of you?
I think what happens with a particular kind of the flavor of mental discomfort that I have is perspective is essential whether or not I'm drinking alcohol. I feel quite lucky to be in such an identifiable process. Like, there is a certain process that I can follow, that if I follow it, I'll be healthy. For a lot of people, their mental health challenges are, you know, we don't really know how to help you get better, and so you try different things. I feel that I quite like the way people are open now. Not quite like, I very much like the way that people are open about mental health now, and there's no, it doesn't seem to have the same shame attached to it as before, because I don't feel any shame about being crazy. It is what it is. It's just, it's about, you know, how do you get the help that you need? I was lucky. I really was lucky, I think, in that I was very clearly someone who had a problem with alcohol. But I don't think, you used a word there, which I kind of, it pings with me when people say, when you overcame that challenge. I don't think you do overcome them. I think what you do is that you change your perspective and you learn new ways of coping. You know, it's like when people say, when did you conquer your fear of A, B, C, or D? Like, well, I didn't conquer my fear. I learned to cope. I learned to embrace it. I learned to do something different with it. It's like, you know, people will sometimes say, when did you know you made it in show business? I mean, I don't know if you make it in show business. I think you can have good days and bad days. I think that's the way it is.
Yeah. Do you regret at all how open? I mean, people know that you were, you know, battling mental health, had challenges with potential suicide, alcoholism, and how bad it got. And you were very much in the public eye. Happy that people know that and you can share that message, or ever have questions like, maybe I shared a little too much?
Well, it gets to the point, maybe this is an age thing, but, you know, if you don't, you know, I don't really have a problem about who I am. I don't apologize for it. I don't regret it, I guess is the short answer. I don't regret it. I'm quite comfortable with it. And I suppose if anything, I'm kind of, sorry, my phone's going. Let me just send a voicemail. There you go. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. People are trying to find you.
Yeah, I know who it is as well, so I'm quite happy to put it to voicemail. There you are. So no, I don't regret being open about it. I feel quite sanguine about that. And the older you get, I think the more you kind of go, "Well, this is who I am." I try not to tread on anybody else's, life, but I am who I am.
So you are, and we've touched on a lot of different things, but you're actually now back out on tour and going to be for a while, going to be through October, going a lot of different places. I'm in Philly, but we air all over the country, so people can check you out. You'll be in Philly September 9th. But why? Why'd you want to get back out and start doing this again?
But I don't know if you noticed, but the last couple of years things have been kind of quiet in the going out world, and I really hanged after this kind of life, so much so that this tour I'm doing is really stripped down. Bought a pickup truck in California. I bought a pickup truck in California, and it's me and my buddy Tomas right there, who's the road manager, and we're on the road, and that's it. Just us. It's just road tripping. No planes, no buses, nothing fancy, no entourage, just me and him.
Really? You guys are legit just road tripping and showing up and doing shows.
Just road tripping. Road tripping and showing up. And I can't tell you how liberating it is. It's so much fun. Because all the other stuff is just, distraction. And I've done it. I'm not saying I haven't done it. Of course I've done it. But this is the best way. I mean, it's because what I love to do is the job. And the job is being on stage and doing stand-up. I love doing that. And, I always equate it like when I was, when I worked as a musician. If you play an instrument, you can join an orchestra. You can play in big fancy things. You can do all that stuff. But really what you do is you play the instrument. And there's nothing to beat just playing the instrument. And that's what I do when I go and do stand-up. That's what I do.
So the Fancy Rascal Tour, what exactly it sounds like you're kind of getting in the car and just going. So are there sets everywhere you go? Or are you just telling the story of the road trip? Like, what are we going to get when we come see the show?
You get a bit of both, actually. I mean, there obviously I have. I think it would be disrespectful to not at least have some, material for the audience. But, life happens on the road. And stuff happens. So if anything happens to me that day and I want to talk to the audience about it, I will. Because I don't have to run it by the producer or the director or my boss or the, it's me. So if you're coming to see me on this tour, you're coming to see me. You're not coming to see anyone else. You're not even coming to see a support act. There isn't a support act. It's me. Somebody said, "You got to have a support act." I'm like, no. I can just suck for the first 20 minutes and charge myself a grand at the show. And then that way, everybody gets what they need.
So why pay somebody else to suck for the first 20 minutes?
Right.
Go ahead and just, it makes sense.
I can do it.
Yeah, that's a smart business decision, I'd imagine.
That's it.
You go ahead and roll with it.
That's it.
So you're from Scotland, and we kind of jumped past that, but you're from Scotland. Obviously had a tremendous level of success here in the United States. Talk show host as well as comedian. There's a lot to discuss and a lot of perspectives from people outside of the country and how they're viewing what goes on in the United States. I'm curious of your take as an inside outsider, who's road tripping.
Well, the first thing that, the thing that I'm always amazed by, particularly in Britain, is how fascinated people in the UK are with America. And what they seem to do is that they will send documentary filmmakers to America, find the craziest person they can, and then say, This is what's going on in America. So, you go, and now we have a typical American gentleman who lives in a dumpster and he wears a hat which says "Who farted" on it. And of course, not all of some of us live like that, and there's nothing wrong with living like that, but it's not everybody. And I think, there's a lot of Americans. There's a lot of different things to look at in America. It's a big, diverse, crazy place. And I love it. And it's, there's a lot going on. As far as, you know, discussing issue by issue, I kind of avoid it because I feel it allows the narrative to lead me. You know, like I have to get dragged into whatever argument du jour I have to get dragged into. And look, I'm a human being, I have opinions about things, but you don't necessarily have to know them all the time, especially if I'm just trying to make you laugh. You don't have to agree with me on anything. It's not important.
So that's interesting from two perspectives. One, the talk show host background, but also the comedian, because it seems like, again, in society, we're going the exact opposite direction of what you want. Everyone wants everybody to know what they think about everything. And then we kind of dig in and we hate each other because we disagree on it. Yeah. You're going the exact opposite direction. It's like almost like the unity comedy tour.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. You know, I think that it's also, it's not necessary. Look, I have comedians that like positions actually that I like, that if I dug into how they felt about things that I have ideas about, I'd feel very differently, but it's not necessary. I don't think it's necessary. Of course, me saying that will enrage people. You know, me just saying it's not necessary for you to know what I think will enrage somebody, but you can't make everybody happy.
Because people want you to dig in and pick sides one way or the other.
I think it's, you know what I blame it on? Here's what I think. The and what happened is we used to be worried about robots taking over the Earth, right? Remember, like Terminator, the robots are going to think, you know, learn to think like us. They'll become sentient and they'll take over the Earth. But robots are smarter than that. They didn't take over the Earth. They became invisible and they live inside your cell phone called AI, which I think stands for Are Invisible. And they live inside your cell phone and they've taught people to think like robots. And that's what it is. And now we think like robots. And robots break everything down to a one or a zero. Yes or no, right or wrong, on or off. And now that's how people think. And I think we have to, you know, smash the robot thinking and get back to somehow throwing gray areas into every single area of human discussion. But of course, everyone will get angry at me for just saying that, or a lot of people.
Well, but so then it begs the question, and I don't know that if you're the person to ask whether or not we need more of you, but do we need more people like that, you know, who are willing to have the discussion? And I certainly don't put myself in that category, but one of the things I didn't want to do with this show when we decided to launch it was to make it another show where we're just arguing with people. Like I just didn't want to do that, but that's what's selling these days.
Well, that's okay. You can buy it or not buy it. I mean, the thing is, like I say, if you don't want to buy into anything I'm saying, it's okay. You don't have to agree with me. It's not that I don't care. You're entitled to your opinion, but and I might change my mind about something. It's kind of another thing that worries me. It's like, if I might go something, and then I hear some information, I go, wait a minute, maybe I was wrong. I like to think about things that are important. And you know, it's not necessarily, does everybody have to comment on everything all the time? I guess.
Isn't it crazy?
I just hate getting dragged into everybody else's argument. You know, it's like, you know, it's like when my mom and dad would argue, I'd go to my room. that's what I want to do. I'm going to my room. Now, if you guys, once you figure it out, I'll come downstairs.
Isn't it insane that I reserve the right to adjust my opinion based on having more information has now somehow become a radical thought process? It's like, we don't do that.
I kind of do it all the time. Winston Churchill said, if you feel the same way at 50 as you did when you were 20, you've wasted 30 years of your life. I went, oh, that's interesting. Of course, I didn't agree with Winston Churchill about a lot of things, but he had some good points as well.
That's right.
I don't know. What can you do?
You like that quote. You're allowed to do that. All right. A couple more things. I appreciate you taking all of this time. And this is fun. I enjoyed the discussion. So I go around and I talk to different members of our team here when I'm going to interview different people and get their feedback. and questions that they would like to ask you. And one of the things that initially came up, particularly from some of the guys, was that he was a world-class flirt when he was doing this show. And now I sat back and kind of learned that guy was smooth. And they showed me a bunch of videos of you on YouTube talking to various celebrity women. How did you do that? And everybody just kind of seemed like they were talking to their close friend. I almost wonder if you could do that in today's society, where people would even have judgment of that.
I don't know, man. I mean, look, I do know that if you, like, when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you, like I said before. So it doesn't matter if, to me, if you're a very big famous movie actress or you work in the turnpike at, you know, in the toll booth, I'm talking to you. So if we're, you know, if we're being funny and we're having fun, that's the way it is. That's the way I talk. I talk to whoever I'm talking to. 100%. I got no strategy for talking to people. I've got no, you know, rules about it. It's just what it is.
The other question that somebody came up, there's a couple actually, but they asked about back in the day, your robot sidekick. So you did not have a, you know, in quotes, co-host. You had a gay robot sidekick. Innovative for the time. Do you think that that's something that would fly now? It certainly wasn't offensive to anybody, but it was a labeled robot.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It was just pretend. I don't know. I can't tell. I can't tell if it would be okay today. I'm not doing it today. I was doing it then, and I don't know. I just don't know. I kind of don't think about it like that. I mean, I know everybody wants you to think about it like that, and everybody wants to have a thing, but I don't. I just, like, I did that, and now I'm doing this.
Yeah. All right. Two more. We always try to give some advice and ideas for people. So I think that this whole interview has been advice for people who are kind of watching your path. Maybe not do it your way, but that's it. That's a way. What do you say to people who are trying to break into the numerous fields that you've been in?
Well, I don't do it the way I did it, because I've just been kind of lucky. I kind of stumbled, you know, from one place to the next. I honestly mean that. I think what I have done is I've tried to listen to people who do that. Like when I started in late night, I was very lucky to have a producer by the name of Peter LaSalle, who is the greatest talk show producer there ever was, because I knew and still kind of know nothing about talk shows. And Peter was my boss and my producer, and he had produced Johnny Carson for 35 years. He had produced David Letterman. He had worked with Jon Stewart. He had worked with, you know, a lot of different guys who are just great at this. And he had helped them find a way through it. And I listened to him. I listened to what he had to say. And I think if you're trying to break into anything, find someone that knows, like driving a truck, find someone who knows how to do it. Ask them the question and then listen.
We also end The Pulse with a concept of use your voice for good. That's how we try to end every show. And I don't know, like, you have a lot of that kind of giving people information and making people laugh. But is there a specific either initiative or advice that you give to people when you hear the statement, use your voice for good?
Use your voice for good. It's too big a concept, because people will say, well, what's good? Some people's idea of good is different to other people's idea of good. Don't be an asshole. Maybe that. But that's kind of the same thing, isn't it?
That may be as right to the point simple an answer as we've gotten so far. You put that on a t-shirt. Like that. It's good life advice, right?
Yeah. I hope, you know, I don't know. It depends. A lot of people wouldn't want my life, and I wouldn't blame them. But it's what I do. It's what I am. I'm not the same as everybody else. Neither are you. Neither is he, she, or they. I mean, it's just, it is what it is.
Final word. Earlier on, you were like, if people don't necessarily like my show, they don't have to come. We're going to give a chance to give, we'll leave with the reasons why they should, both here in Philly on the 9th, but really all over the country for the next 2 months.
Well, I should give them a reason why they should come.
That was kind of where I was going with that, but yeah.
No, I can't do that because I don't know you. I don't know what you like. You know, if you like me, that'd probably be a good idea. And if you're on the fence about me, err on the side of caution and don't bother. That's what I would do. But, you know, maybe you might feel differently.
I think we're going to leave it there. I appreciate you taking the time out. I enjoyed all of the information and the fun. I hope you guys get to wherever you're going and we don't have to amend this whole interview with the little thing across the bottom that says Craig Ferguson never made it to the location in question. He is currently being detained.
Oh, I thought you meant it was.
No, I'm not going there. We're not ending with that. Going back to the overplayed on the run theme I've been addressing all throughout this discussion.
Okay, and it's good. It's good.
Yeah,
stay with it.
Don't do that to me. We wish you only the best.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate you. Safe travels. We'll see you in Philly.
Thanks, both. See you.
All right, take care. Thank you so much for listening again to The Pulse with Bill Anderson today with comedian, actor, talk show host Craig Ferguson. It was fun kind of hearing a very different perspective. Somebody who just did things their way, learned from it, grew from it. And when he was done, he was okay with what he had kind of left behind. Here's my story. Here's what I did. And you can like it or not. Hope you like it, but it's not going to break my heart or my back if you don't. Remember that you should subscribe to this podcast, The Pulse with Bill Anderson. Hit that subscribe button so every Monday when a new show comes out, you'll get the notification and hopefully listen to it. Also, follow me on social media at Bill A. Fox 29 on all platforms. I would love to hear from you whenever you get a chance. And if you happen to be in Philadelphia, if you would like to watch the show on TV, we air Monday nights at 6:30 on Fox 29. Of course, we air nationally Monday nights at 9 p.m. on Fox Soul. Thank you so much. As always, I appreciate you, and I leave you the way I always do. Whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.